My name's Lindsay and I'm an addict.
Hi, Lindsay.
And I was reminded that I am among friends here. And that is so true. And that's kind of really helped with the fear and anxiety that I'm presently feeling. And I've been kind of going in and out of that all day. And the only time that I was truly relieved of it, I mean completely relieved of it, was on the bus here when my sponsees have to kind of check in and ring in. And so it was probably about sort of like 30 minutes of kind of like, you know, being completely sort of out of self, basically. And I was that fear just disappeared. And that's really my experience, really, of this program, is that when I'm doing stuff for other people, it's like my fear vanishes, you know, because I have an illness. It's an illness called addiction, and it does. It completely revolves around me. It's centered in my thinking, and you know, that kind of that complete self-centered fear. And what I mean by that, because it's a kind of a bit of an odd phrase, and I know that, you know, when I'm speaking, I try and speak like I, you know, would to somebody who was new in the door, because, you know, all these words that we hear in here, it's like it can sometimes not be very clear. You know, that self-centered fear for me is like, it's like whoomph, you know, I can just feel the whole room kind of collapsing in on me. And obviously everybody is looking at me, but that's a reality at this precise moment. But I can feel it, you know, in a variety of situations. Radcliffe, you're such a hard act to follow, I must say, you know. And I just wanted to share back to you, it's a privilege to kind of be sat up here on this table with you. And I always love listening to you. And fantastic. However, it's like we have completely different stories, you know. The first time I got in touch with NA, I actually got their number. I was about 23 years old. I was kind of in the middle of a kind of psychotic episode, and it was the middle of the night. I was watching a movie, and at the end of the movie, it had the NA helpline number on it, and I scribbled it down on a piece of paper. And I have no idea why I did that. I have absolutely no idea why I did that. And, you know, once I'd sort of gone to the hospital, I'd been prescribed some quite heavy medication. I'd been told to stop smoking puff. You know, I did say to them, you know, is it okay if I have alcohol? They said yes, so that was it. I was just drunk then the whole time. And I found the NA helpline number. And I rang the helpline, and unfortunately, my mind was not open at that point to receive what was on offer here. You know, I spoke to somebody, they talked about cocaine. I thought, I don't have a problem with cocaine. And I then went on to have another 10 years of absolute misery and suicidal despair, etc. And it wouldn't be constant. You know, I'd kind of go in and out, you know, because I'd find different things that would kind of, you know, help me. I mean, after that particular psychotic episode, it was all about me. It certainly was. I thought that I could, at the time, there was floods going on in Mississippi, and I really thought that I had something to do with that. I really believed that I was that powerful, and that evil, that I could like destroy certain parts of the world, you know, just through sitting in my front room and having a joint, you know. And you know, and that's how it was for me, you know. As I say, before I even picked up the drugs, I can now on reflection see that I have always suffered from this illness. I don't actually remember my first drink. I don't remember it. It was always around. We drank on Sundays. My parents used to throw huge, great big parties. And, you know, and I would go round and I would kind of serve the vol-au-vents or whatever they were. And everyone would kind of pat me on the head. And as everyone got drunker and drunker, I would then start to go around and drink the dregs of what people had been drinking. Now, I don't know how far back that went. That's what I mean. I cannot remember my first drink at all. I do remember, though, like, I had the kind of the thing of I always wanted more. I always wanted more. It's like I was given 10 pence pocket money every week to go and get sweets at the shop that you had to cycle to. You know, I'd be diving into my mother's purse for tuppences more, you know, just so that I could get more, you know. I was never satisfied with what I had. So I was stealing, like, from probably about the age of 4 or 5. I was also stealing, you know, a bit later on, maybe 8, 9, from my mother's friends. You know, their handbags would be lying around, and I'd kind of go into them, and I'd take money. And, you know, the consequence for me was that I ended up sort of, you know, at age 12, basically shoplifting with my friend. And, you know, we started off shoplifting very small amounts, you know, but it got to the point where, like, we got nicked with about sort of over £100 worth of stuff, which, however many years ago was it, 18 years ago, is actually quite a lot of stuff. And we used to nick the bags in order to put the stuff in to kind of go out with them. And we got caught in Sainsbury's nicking 3 cream eggs. I mean, it was just, you know, madness. And, you know, so I got kind of dragged down to the police station. And that was kind of, I suppose, you know, I mean, I'd had various sort of relationships with the God of my understanding, but I was definitely on my knees in that cell begging for help because I was terrified of what was going to happen. I'm just going to have a sip of water. Your mouth gets all dry, doesn't it? So all I know is that that happened very shortly after my very first alcoholic binge, I suppose. You know, I was at my sister's house. She had a farm, and the kids were sitting at one table, the adults were sitting at another table, and we were drinking grape juice that summer, and this guy kept topping my glass up with what I assumed was grape juice, and it didn't taste like grape juice, and it didn't smell like grape juice, but I just drank it, and I asked for more, and I got more, and I had more, and I got more, and I was actually in blackout. You know, I was paralytic in blackout. And I didn't realise, I hadn't a clue about this illness. You know, that to me, looking back on it, was actually, I had an allergy to alcohol. The next drug that I was using was marijuana. The same sort of thing happened. I was about 14 years old. I remember sort of being down the canal with my friend. You know, he rolled the joint. We smoked it, and I just went into complete whitey, felt sick, felt ill, you know, and yet it didn't occur to me that maybe I shouldn't kind of have this again. The same thing happened when I took Tippex thinner, you know, really didn't like it, really didn't like the way it made me kind of lose consciousness, really, you know, quite nasty, but again, I kept doing it. The same with... I don't know, whatever else, I can't even think at the moment, whatever other sort of drugs I took. Every new drug I took, it was just like, it was the same thing. It's like my body had this allergic reaction to it. And it didn't occur to me at all not to kind of stop using. Oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. I had mushrooms for the first time, and it was just the grimmest experience, you know, in a council flat with a mattress. You know, and I just, oh my God, you know, but did it stop me from doing it again? No, it didn't. So really sort of continuously, you know, using alcohol, using drugs, I just kind of basically just kept using. And I didn't realise that I didn't have a problem. I had absolutely no idea. you know, that I had a problem with drugs. I had no idea until I came here, until I came to this fellowship. And the extremes of that, when I was 18, I moved up to London. I became a qualified nurse and I started working in special care baby units. And I also myself was pregnant, and I used to look after babies that were withdrawing from heroin, from methadone, from alcohol, from glue, from everything. This was up in Homerton Hospital, and it didn't occur to me once to stop drinking, to stop using speed, to stop puffing. It just didn't occur to me. I had no idea that I was actually, you know, the same. It was only after sort of I was out one night, my partner at the time used to set up parties and clubs, and you know, one of his friends came up to me and took the pint out of my hand and said, "Lindsay, you cannot do that anymore." And it was like a light bulb went on. It was just like, oh yeah, okay, I can't drink, you know. So I just puffed my head off, basically. And fortunately, that doesn't, you know, seem to have affected, you know, my child, as in when he was born, his weight was okay. You know, he's very intelligent, etc. He's actually, you know, he's 17 now, and that's a whole nother story. So I just kind of, I got to the point really where I was so kind of miserable. I really didn't know what I'd kind of been put on the planet for. I remember, like, because I was, oh my God, I was 6 years clean on Tuesday. So, like, Radcliffe was 4 years clean. Oh my God, it's just suddenly sort of like, because I'm thinking back now to how I kind of came in, and it was like over Christmas and New Year, the drugs had dried up. They'd completely dried up. And so I was back kind of like drinking shitloads again. And, you know, because it was like, I just switched drugs. I didn't kind of, that's what I did. And I remember kind of ringing the NA helpline. I think it might have been the first or second of January, and this woman on the phone said, "If you think you've got a problem, then maybe you should come to a meeting." Now, I really expected her to say, because I was like, "Oh, I feel so awful," and da da da, and I really want to kill myself, and da da da, and I really thought she was going to say, "Well, just stop everything, you know, and within a month you're going to be fine." You know, but that wasn't the response I got. And against all the rules, she actually met me at this meeting, and I'm truly grateful for that. It was a women's meeting, and I sat in this meeting, and I basically, the similarities were just unbelievable. And I remember that reading I didn't remember any of the readings apart from when it talked about, you know, medicine, religion and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress. And I remembered that. I just remembered that kind of phrase. And I thought, okay, you know, this is where I need to be. And I, you know, everyone was really helpful to me at that first meeting. They gave me a basic text, they gave me phone numbers, and they told me to come back. So I went home, and that night I read about 2/3 of the basic text. It talked about helping others, and that's all I saw. And I thought, I've been helping others my whole life, you know, and I'm the one that needs help. And I was really kind of, I was really in that kind of hope, but at the same time thought, maybe I can do this by myself. Now, fortunately, this woman rang me. She rang me a few days later, and I said to her, "Oh no, I'm okay, I can do this by myself." You know, and luckily she said to me, "I'm gonna, you know, meet me at another meeting. That's your illness talking." And I now realise that my illness, it wants me isolated. It wants me on my own. And it basically wants me dead. That's basically what my illness wants. So she met me at another meeting, and I'd had a kind of a relapse in between that, you know, a glass of wine. But on the 8th of January, 2000, and what would it be, 2002? Yeah, that was my very first clean day. And it's been really tough, really, really tough. You know, it's not been an easy journey for me, and I can only share my experience. You know, I got myself a sponsor in the first couple of weeks, and I'm really grateful to this person. However, I had no idea what to look for in a sponsor. I had absolutely no idea. I was told, get somebody who's a couple of years clean and who's working the steps. So I rang this woman up and I said to her, how clean are you? She said, I'm 2 years. And I said, and are you working the steps? She said, yes, I'm on a step two. So I said, well, will you be my sponsor? And she's like, yep, I'll be your sponsor. Now, this is my journey. It's been an incredible experience. This woman was amazing, and she taught me lots and lots of stuff. And I did stay clean. But I did go through an awful lot of pain. You know, I went through an awful lot of pain. I was doing the steps incredibly slowly. My first step took me 10 months to write. My second step took me 6 months to write. My third step took me 6 months to write. And I just had no idea. That's all I'm going to say. Unfortunately, because of circumstances within her own life, we had to separate, and I found a new sponsor who, you know, again, we went through things very, very slowly. And I couldn't understand why this feeling of desperation, this feeling of suicide kept returning to me. I had absolutely not a clue, and I now realise it was because I was not being educated in the proper way, if that makes any sense. I'm only talking about my own experience. I ended up last April, I was in such a space where I was just like, again, I'd reached this place of, what is the point? I don't understand. I'm staying clean. I think I'm doing all the right things. And, you know, and it just seems to be getting harder and harder. And I really, really believed that I was doing all the right things for my recovery. And I think I did work as hard as I could have worked at it with the knowledge that I had. So I basically luckily, I was open-minded enough to go somewhere to go to a meeting. I was given a sponsor at that meeting, and that sponsor took me through the 12 steps really quickly and gave me some suggestions that I now do on a daily basis. Because I realise, for myself, I don't know about anybody else, but if I don't do this stuff like on a daily basis, like really quite intense, I'm just going to feel shit. You know, I'm just going to feel suicidal. I'm just not going to want to live. And that's how strong my illness is. Since I've gone through the 12 steps and since I've been doing the suggestions that I do, on a daily basis, it has really, really turned things around for me. And I'm not going to say that that I don't find life difficult. You know, I think for myself, I am an ill person trying to get well, and I'm doing the best I can. Basically, I have to, you know, I get down on my knees every morning. I ask for a clean day. I also ask for a nicotine-free day. And when the depression is on me, I ask for that to be lifted, because otherwise it's just, you know, if I don't ask for that, I'm you know, quite sort of tortured in some ways. And then I get on with my day. You know, I do my daily readings. I read my Just for Today. And I get on with my day, you know, and I do the things that I need to do. And even though I may not necessarily feel like amazing all the time, I know I have a great big smile on my face a lot, but I just do what I need to do. You know, I come to meetings, I have sponsees, I share my experience, strength and hope with them. That's what's amazing for me. It's when I'm doing that stuff that all my kind of depression is basically lifted in its entirety. And you know, and that's you know, and then in the evening, like tonight, you know, I'll go home, you know, I'll write my gratitude list, I'll do my step 10, and I'll pray, I'll say thank you, thank God for another clean day, you know. And yeah, and it's just like, you know, that's, it's kind of been really, really, truly amazing for me. And I think that you know, I really have experienced a miracle, because even though I can feel like, especially when I'm on my own at home, I can feel really like it's like trudging through mud sometimes. You know I have enough faith in this program. I have enough faith in the people that went before me to know that, you know, at some point that will lift, it will shift, and I just need to keep sort of putting the action in. And there have been points when that has lifted and it has shifted. And you know, the one thing I want to talk about really is you know, sponsorship. I had to separate from this person who took me through the 12 steps for one reason and another, and I've got a temporary sponsor at the moment. But it's really, really hard to find a woman sponsor in this fellowship that has done all the work. You know, it's really difficult. And I know that having shared that with other women in this fellowship, that they find the same thing. You know, I asked this person who's become my temporary sponsor to you know, to sponsor me, and unfortunately, you know, because of the responsibility she has, because she has sponsees already, it's like she can't take on another one, you know. And and this is why I do this stuff. I really believe so strongly in the fact that if I can sponsor women, you know, and I have sponsees, if they can do the work, and if they can start taking other people through this work as well, through the 12 steps, because I know for myself, it's like, even though I have, you know, certain amount of depression left within me, a certain residue, it's nothing like what it was like when I first walked in the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was in complete despair. I was planning my suicide. I was asking my son, where would you like to go and live? Who would you like to live with? So that I could basically end my life. I'd so had enough. And, you know, that was 6 years ago. I know that, you know, I am a work in progress. I am a work in progress. But my biggest kind of... The greatest stuff for me is my sponsees, and I have to say that's what keeps me coming back to this fellowship, is sponsoring other women. You know, they're just amazing. They're just amazing. It's so lovely to be able to pass on stuff to these women. You know, one of them rang me up just for today a couple of days ago, was about, you know, thank your sponsor. And, you know, and one of them rang me up and was like, thank you. It's like, you know, you've really supported me and all the rest of it. And it was just like the glow that I got with inside myself is just worth it. It's so worth it. yeah, I'm just like, you know, and then I've taken another sponsee through a step one yesterday, and I spoke to her as I sail on the bus on the way over, and she's just like, wow, this is, you know, she's just amazed by how she feels today. And it's that kind of work that I really value so much in this fellowship. You know, I have to say, I mean, I've done loads of service in this fellowship. I've done loads of it. You know, I got my first service commitment when I was 28 days clean, greeting at a meeting. I've done all sorts of service, but that is, for me, that's where it's at, is service to others, is working one-on-one with another addict, and passing on what's been passed on to me. Even though what's been passed on to me has been very higgledy-piggledy, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I know that my program's okay. I know that I'm doing okay. I read the book every day. It's all in here, you know, chapter 5. If anybody doesn't know what all the suggestions are, they're all in chapter 5. You know, go home and read it, basically. Yeah, I'm just really grateful. I think I'm gonna leave it there, and I hope I've said something to help somebody, and that's it. Thank you.